Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's coming home, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the front three with me, Adam Boltwood, alongside Chris Hennich.
Good evening.
We are here to talk about England's dramatic penalty win over Colombia last night, which saw them through to the quarterfinals of the World Cup. We're also going to be previewing all those games in the last eight coming up this Friday and Saturday. Very exciting stuff indeed. But we do have to start with England, Chris, who won a World Cup penalty shootout for the first time ever. Incredible scenes. How are you feeling after the game? I'm still almost struggling to wrap my head around it a little bit.
Yeah, it was utterly surreal. I've got to confess, history led me to kind of the conclusion that once Jordan Henderson missed, that it was going to repeat itself.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. In the euphoria of the moment, which I think was prevalent from every street, pub and Twitter account from England, I think you have to actually just focus in on the fact that it's genuine progress. That's what it is. It's genuine progress in the sense that it's a mental advantage in so much as, you know, they can take from this and push forward and say, you know, we've done this before. This is not new territory for us, which last night it absolutely was. And at the same time, I think it's progress in the sense that Gareth Southgate has never talked about penalties as this intangible lottery. He's never talked about it in what I would argue are very traditional English terms that I think previous managers would have confined it to. He's actually talked about the process. He's studied it. He's worked on it. There's a ton of great pieces you can read floating around now on the internet about that, about the methodology he's applied, the psychology that he's applied to make this England team better penalty takers. And I think in a funny way, I think for me, that penalty shootout is a microcosm for the change that English football has undergone. You can go right back with it with Gareth Southgate, because there's talk about him being in the system for so long and introducing small-sided games and all those changes that are now starting to bear fruit on the tree of the English football. And yet, at the same time, I think we've got so much more. I think we're not touching our ceiling by any stretch. I think we can see it, though, which is progress.
Obviously, Gareth Southgate deserves a huge amount of credit for, as you say, he's sort of seen as a company man in the FA. And it's sort of funny to think back to when he was announced as England manager and how much people doubted him. And now to sort of see the fruits of his labour and see how everything he's introduced in terms of the structure and changing the way this England team operates, as you sort of mentioned there, is fantastic to see, really. In terms of the game itself, let's start with the positives, obviously. I mean, as you say, winning a penalty shootout mentally, that's such an incredible achievement for England. You know, they go into the quarterfinals and these crucial stages of the competition knowing now that they can win a World Cup game on spot kicks. And I was relatively impressed with the performance as well. Harry Maguire stood out for many as one of the men of the match, alongside John Stones in defence. There were positives to take from this game, Chris.
Yeah, I think it was a contrasting 90 minutes or 120 minutes, whichever way you want to look at it, in so much as I thought defensively they were strong. I don't actually think Colombia were very attack-minded or very aggressive in attacking. I thought Peckerman was a little bit over-conservative with his holding midfielders and just in general, I thought they could have played more football. And that's not even sort of referencing the shithousery, if you will, for want of a better term.
Perfect term.
I think England, by the same stretch, I think while they had more of the ball, I don't think they did anything with it either. I thought Dele Alli was largely anonymous. I thought Lingard and Sterling put effort in, but there wasn't much reward for that effort. The only one I would sort of exonerate from that critique is Harry Kane, who I thought genuinely, not just the penalty, his hold-up play, his ability to bring others in, he was world-class. He absolutely was the only one. He was the only one on that pitch, genuinely, that I thought, you know what, you could absolutely play for any club in this world that you want to.
Oh, yeah.
You could rock up anywhere and say, you know.
That worrying thought went through my head as well. But he signed a new contract, guys. It's fine. I was trying to get you to talk about the positives there, but it was, my perception of the game was, broadly speaking, you know, in hindsight, sort of thinking about it in a more sort of analytical sense, was that, as you say, this system means that England look strong defensively, the three at the back, and the combination of Maguire, Stones and Walker, who are all comfortable with the ball at their feet, means this philosophy of playing it out from the back. You know, there's so many options in terms of their defensive passing lanes. But going forward, it doesn't seem to be quite clicking. As you say, Harry Kane, I think, deserves to be singled out for a fantastic performance. But around him, it doesn't seem to quite be working, Chris?
No, I don't think it is. I think against Panama, it briefly showed glimpses of success, but I think too often there's too much distance between the individuals. I don't think there's enough fluency. There's a certain element of there not actually being enough men committed forward, I would argue, as well. I think that's one of the problems with Ashley Young at left wing back, is that he's not left-footed and he's really not that comfortable on his left foot either, so he always wants to take it on his right and then either go inside or go back. And I think you need someone who's willing to commit down the outside and hit that byline, or at least give you that option, because I don't think he's running in behind that much either. And so it was one of those nights where I thought, for me personally, Rashford, Loftus-Cheek, those were two where I thought, you know what, there's a bundle of energy, pace, but also an ability to carry the ball, because Sterling is fast. I think Lingard's not slow at all. And yet, for me, it felt like someone like Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who seems to thrive in those tight positions in the half space between the fullback and the centre back, that was the kind of player that I wanted last night, and it just wasn't forthcoming. And I think as much as we can eulogise about Southgate and everything, there always has to be room for improvement. You can't be ignorant to that, because I think that's when complacency sets in. And actually, for all the brilliance of the penalty shoot, I would argue that was kind of the problem. Jordan Pickford pulls off a ridiculous save.
Oh, unbelievable.
Genuinely. He again, is another one that it's crazy to think we probably could have started talking about a number of England players tonight and how great they were. But Pickford, with the penalties, with that save, was sensational. And yet, that corner, they switch off and, you know, if you're always playing the hypothetical game to a certain extent, if it's 1-1, if it's 0-0, that puts you out. And I think it's those fine margins that we just have to smooth out now we get into what I would consider the business end of this tournament.
Well, that's just it. I think, you know, in open play, England, they're, like we're saying, they do look relatively solid at the back. And, you know, in Pickford, he demonstrated just how good a goalkeeper, a shot stopper he can be last night. But of the four goals England have conceded, three of them have been from set pieces. We haven't yet kept a clean sheet in the competition. The goal we scored last night, the penalty from Harry Kane, that means in 4 hours of World Cup football, the one goal we scored was from the spot. You know, of course, there's a lot, there's deserved, there's understandable euphoria. You know, there's no other way I'd rather win a game for England. But having said that, it does feel like they need to step up their game against Sweden, because there's this feeling, this gnawing feeling that, you know, they're going to present issues for this England side.
Absolutely. I think that's the key almost duality from this game, is that I think from set pieces they were still a threat. Again, they were a threat. Harry Maguire didn't convert anything, but you can see, even with Yerry Mina, who I thought was really good in the air, there was a few times he just got a couple of strands of hair to that ball and knocked it away from Harry Maguire. I don't think that every team that's left in this tournament has that kind of aerial prowess in their back line. So I think you can focus on that positive. But at the same time, it was a very sort of bitty game. I thought Jonathan Liu of The Independent, who is a very good sports writer, kind of summed it up quite well when he said England and Colombia pulled each other's shirts for 120 minutes. Neither of them was very good. England won by 4-3, and that really was it. That's a fair kind of synopsis of proceedings, I would argue.
This, I mean, we sort of, you touched on it earlier, the midfield, that seems to be the area that isn't particularly functioning. Dele Alli was singled out for criticism last night. He was coming back from injury to perhaps caveat that performance. Raheem Sterling as well, playing more forward than the midfield, admittedly, is again someone who's receiving a lot of criticism. There is that sense that even if we do get past Sweden, which, you know, presents its own challenge, we are going to come up against a team with much better quality in midfield. And that feels like where England are potentially going to fall down if we get to that stage.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's an interesting conundrum in so much as apart from the Belgium game, excuse me, I would argue England have been the favourite. I would want to check against the bookies' numbers. If you'd like to sponsor the podcast. I would imagine England have been favourites with the bookmakers in every game but the Belgium one. And because of that, I think that's put an onus on them to dominate possession. And we saw with Panama, they had most of the ball. Tunisia, they had a lot more of the ball. And again, with Colombia, it was a little bit more even, I would say. But there was periods definitely where England sort of had to keep the ball, and it was Stones or Maguire or Walker who were sort of looking to distribute. Put them in a position where they're not the favourites, so hypothetically a France, a Brazil, that then puts an interesting spin on things, because actually France against Argentina opted to give them the ball and try to be really efficient with possession. So I would wonder how this team would react to almost that underdog status, because I think that's a theme that we've seen of the tournament. You go back to Mexico, Germany, Sweden, Germany for long periods. I know that they lost the game, but they were quite happy to give Germany the ball and say, you know, come break us down, find holes where we haven't left them. And I think that would be an interesting test for England, because actually I would say two of their three centre-backs, Maguire especially, are very good defenders first and foremost. They're all decent on the ball to varying degrees. Stones, I would argue, is the best. But it's how that team changes when you're not having a lot of possession, because then that means theoretically Ali and Lingard have to do more off the ball. And that's a big ask for two attacking midfielders who want to inhabit the same space, who want to peel off into that left channel and do stuff there, because they're going to have to be a lot more disciplined.
Would you change up that midfield going into this game against Sweden? Because Sweden, the headline statistic of them is they've kept clean sheets in three of their four games so far in the World Cup. Obviously a very difficult side to break down. Would you change up that midfield in order to give England more attacking options, more attacking thrust, or do you stick with Lingard, Henderson alongside Ali?
I think Lingard has earned enough for a stay. I'm just not sold with Ali, I have to confess. I'm just not. I think someone like Loftus-Cheek, who can make the most of that 5 yards, because again, I don't think Sweden are going to undergo a tactical revolution here and suddenly decide to start trying to dominate possession and that stuff. They're going to do exactly what they did against Switzerland, exactly what they did for pretty much the group stages, and essentially have quite a low block and look to organise fairly swift counterattacks. In which case, you know, someone like Granqvist, for example, I think in a foot race, Loftus-Cheek beats him 8 days out of 7, personally. And so that's where I think, well, there's a benefit there, because you're going to have to be in tight spaces. And in truth, I appreciate Ali's been injured, but I think he's looked quite meek during these opening games. Personally, I've not seen anything to suggest that his form's about to take a drastic upturn. And I think, you know, for all the haranguing we did about the squad before this tournament, about, you know, Lascelles and Shelby and Tarkowski and all these players that could and should have would have got in, one of the benefits of Gareth picking the squad he has is that it's very interchangeable. So if hypothetically Loftus-Cheek has a stinker, you throw Rashford in, or if Rashford has a stinker, vice versa. And the same with Ali. If you want to throw him on later on, you can do that. And I think that's the benefit of having such a very defined structure and applying all 23 places to that one tactic, is that it's not hard to change people out.
Do you feel confident going into this one? It feels hard not to, given the way England won last night and everyone's getting swept up here in this football's coming home phenomenon. But I think on match day, I'm going to feel nervous about potentially England's inability to break this side down.
Yeah, I think nervous is understandable. I think at the same time, there were concerns about Colombia as well. Colombia had done very well in the group stages.
I think if James Rodriguez had been there, it would have been a very different game. But yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah, I was going to say the absence of James is significant to Colombia, undeniably. Saying that, I thought they kept Quintero very quiet. And I think if you could almost apply that same approach to Forsberg, then I think, you know, success is achievable. At the same time, why not feel optimistic? Because I think it's almost one of football's great hypocrisies, that thing we talk about where you say before kickoff, I would settle for a point at, you know, this very difficult game. And then you go 1-0 up in the 60th minute and you think, right now I want to win, and you would be disappointed with a point. It's a similar thing as so much as we entered this tournament with the hope of making a quarterfinal. Now we have done that. We have made that achievement or that goal, excuse me.
That was so close to the semis. Oh, yeah.
And that's the thing. I'm convinced that when this tournament started, not a soul in the world predicted that the other quarterfinalists would be Sweden, Croatia, Russia.
Yeah, it does feel like everything is coming up in your house in many ways for England and Gareth Southgate. You know, mm-hmm. to be on that side of the draw, which, you know, there was that potential egg over Southgate's face if this had all gone wrong, if they'd have lost last night to Colombia, that decision to rest so many players against Belgium. I think he's been vindicated in that. Jordan Pickford came under some, frankly, ridiculous criticism for the goal we conceded against Belgium. Thibaut Courtois coming out and saying, you know, Jordan Pickford's too short, basically. He would have saved that. The criticism for Pickford going with the wrong arm, I think he answered his critics last night. And of course, as you say, fortuitously somewhat, this side of the draw ending up in the fashion it has, with Spain being knocked out by Russia, etc., England do have an unbelievable chance to get to the semi-finals and the finals, potentially, not to get ahead of myself.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. And I think in that sense, Gareth has done more than enough to justify being given more time with this national team to see what he can do. Because that's the other thing. You have to look sometimes, to borrow an American phrase, what's coming up the turnpike or down the turnpike. Excuse me, I should have really sure of what the idiom I was going to use before I said it. But what's coming down the road, in so much as we've got very promising youth teams that are winning tournaments, that are bringing that experience with them, the likes of Jadon Sancho that we've talked about before, who will slowly integrate into this team in time, possibly in some cases for the next Euros, if not definitely for the next World Cup. And that's something where I think, okay, well, we can grow and adapt and evolve. And I think that's the key, is that for the first time with England, it feels like there's a very clear identity that is open for adaptation. And look, I totally understand why people want to believe in everything, and I'm of the same opinion. I think absolutely we can make this final. This is, as Gary Neville has rightly said, this is the best chance England have had to make a final post Italia 90. I would include Italia 90 as well, because I think West Germany, the eventual winners, were a much harder proposition than what they'll potentially face. So I almost think it's about enjoying it now. You know, I think that's the thing. We get so in our heads about, you know, the stress and the pressure and can we do it and will it be heartache? I almost think at this point, you choose whether it's heartache. You know, I think you choose whether you take from this tournament that we won a penalty shootout in hugely dramatic fashion and the whole country got to roar.
Yeah, I think
that's brilliant.
You know, it has come home in the sense of everyone is behind this England team for the first time in a decade, I would suggest, and it is incredibly refreshing, as you say, to see an England team play with a clear identity, play with a clear plan, which definitely hasn't been apparent in recent major tournaments. To see a player like Harry Kane, as you say, one of the few world-class players on this team, playing up to his potential and showing everyone just how good he is. You know, you've got Harry Maguire, who's got that sort of heart on sleeve, passion about him that everyone loves so much. It's refreshing to see an England team like this. And yeah, hopefully they can do it against Sweden on Saturday in the World Cup quarterfinal.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finals. There are some very tasty other quarterfinals coming up as well. First off, on Friday, the first game of which is Uruguay against France, Chris. This is a very intriguing matchup, of course. France coming 4-3 in a thriller against Argentina, one of the games of the tournament so far, against the Uruguay side, who beat Cristiano Ronaldo's Portugal. How do you see this one going? Kylian Mbappe, of course, stealing all the headlines in that last game against Argentina, and the focus on him going into this one.
Yeah, it's a fascinating game, I have to admit, purely on the basis that, as we talked about there with Argentina, France were, I would say, very efficient in possession and very comfortable to almost welcome Argentina on because they knew that open spaces. And I think they knew Mbappe had the beating of that entire back line when it came to pace. And it didn't take long for him to blitz two or three of them, the penalty. Uruguay, it's a totally different proposition because I wouldn't say their back line is markedly faster than Argentina's, but player for player, it's absolutely better. I would say Godin, Jimenez is actually, when I think about it, quite quick. And even Cáceres, I think with this back three that they've started to use, they've got a much better formation for the players at Tabárez's disposal. And it essentially covers the fact that they don't have any great wingers. They've got Cristian Rodriguez, who is older. He's not a traditional winger now. He's not going to bomb down the wing or anything like that. He's going to pick spaces, I would say, off the striker and try and find passes and actually play more centrally, if anything. So the likes of Laxalt can bomb up and down as he has done for Genoa. He's not the most gifted technically, I would say, Laxalt, but he's quick, he's aggressive, he wants to get into the final third. That's all you can really ask for from a wing back, especially one that will be willing to do his defensive duties, which I thought he did very well against Portugal. To that end, to almost reinforce what we talked about before, I'll be curious to see if France are able to sort of give up possession in the same way or whether who will win that battle of wills. Will it be a case of Uruguay looking to take the role as that counterpuncher? I could see it being a really cagey game for that same reason.
Yeah, Uruguay have conceded just one goal in their four games so far. And with Cavani potentially an injury doubt, you wonder if they are going to sit back and try and counter France. It's going to be an interesting matchup, I think. Who's your money on, though, Uruguay or France? I'm tempted to say France, but I can sort of see Uruguay pulling off a little bit of an upset here.
The England fan in me is saying 1-0 Uruguay. That's the thing. It looks like they're going to be missing Cavani. Because he obviously limped. I'm trying to just check now. Yeah, it says that he won't start, but he will hope to make the bench. That's such a big loss for them as well, because Suarez on paper is a good forward, but he's not what he was at all. He's not what he was. So personally, I think it'll probably be 2-0 France.
Okay, I like that. I think I'm on board with that. What about Brazil-Belgium? Also on Friday, looking very tasty indeed. Lots of goals from both of those teams in the tournament so far. Neymar, of course, the main man for the Seleção, obviously got a goal and assist against Mexico, who Brazil eventually broke down. What have you made of Neymar in this tournament? Because obviously there is some criticism for some of his theatrics, shall we say. The status of doing the rounds today was that he spent 14 minutes rolling around on the floor so far in the World Cup. It hasn't exactly endeared him to an international audience. But as Lawrence McKenna said to me a couple of days ago, we can't criticise Neymar because that's his culture. He's coming from a culture which embraces those aspects of the game. I tend to agree with him, but at the same time, it doesn't make them any more palatable.
Yeah, I mean, look, he does get stamped on by Lyon, and you know, I thought there was something a Brazilian journalist said that seems so perfect for this, so I'm essentially going to parrot it, which is that Neymar spent so long crying monster that no one believed him when the wolf was at the door. And I think that's the problem he faces, is because of the way that he goes on, because of the over-exaggeration, if you will. You saw it against Costa Rica where he sort of just falls back as if he's been pushed over by, I was going to say giant haystacks, but I don't know if our listeners will know who that is, when actually he's got a hand on him at most and it's not a penalty. That means that when something like the Lyon incident happens, those critics then rush out and go, oh, he's overacting, he's play acting, when there's an argument to be made that he's probably just drawing attention to the fact he's been stamped on. Purely from a playing standpoint, personally, I thought he was a little bit self-indulgent at first. I thought he played like we've seen him play at PSG, which is someone that wants time on the ball, that I think gets almost too engrossed in this individual battle about beating man, beating two men, three men, when actually there's a benefit sometimes in just moving it quickly. I think he's worked on that a bit better. I think Roberto Firmino playing up front and then switching to a 4-4-2 seems to fit him and Brazil, I think, a little bit better. I think that's something that Tite has done really well, is give this team more of a defensive structure, giving them more of a almost a togetherness when they're not on the ball. And yet when they're on it, that's when they can get the likes of Neymar and Coutinho to do those wonderful things. But I think that's, to me, that's the thing with Neymar, is I think sometimes in relinquishing control, that's when you give yourself the platform to succeed. And I think almost he's too desperate to be involved in everything when, you know, the truth is you can't pass and score to yourself. You know, you have to build a platform with the others around you to do one or the other.
What about Belgium then? Obviously, scraped through against Japan with a last minute winner from none other than Nasser Chadli. What did you make of that game? Because obviously Belgium going down 2-0 to Japan, it was a real shock. All of a sudden, Roberto Martinez makes his changes. Marouane Fellaini comes on. Nasser Chadli, you know, his tactical awareness, his tactical ability is much derided, Roberto Martinez, but it worked perfectly. It turns the game around. And they both score as Belgium win 3-2.
Yeah, I mean, oh, Bobby.
Big Bobby.
I mean, he's a great fan of Jason Derulo, so I can't hold that against him. I mean, look, that's a criticism that's dogged him at Everton, less so at Wigan, that he could play some nice stuff, but tactically he just wasn't. He was missing a piece of his jigsaw, and I think that's a criticism that's been levelled at Belgium, is that De Bruyne is playing too deep. Because I think when you watch him for Belgium in central midfield, and when you watch him for Manchester City in central midfield, those are two vastly different roles under Pep Guardiola and Roberto Martinez. It's a little bit lacking, I think, in nuance to just say, well, he's playing him where Pep's playing him, because that's not the same role. And I think if you look at some of the best stuff he's done in this tournament, such as his assist for Lukaku's header, I want to say against Panama, was it? Or Tunisia? I'm pretty sure our listeners will know the goal I'm talking about. He's in the half space. He's in the half space in the final third with a beautiful outside of the boot pass, which finds Lukaku's head. That's where I want Kevin De Bruyne to be. I think Hazard can exist around that space. Lukaku can stay in the box. And I think that's where it works best for them. And that's the problem, is that it feels almost overcautious to name it. You could argue that there's a benefit in maybe playing the same way that England do with Belgium. The problem is they don't really have a natural left wing back. Chadli put in good yards when he came on and has been, I would say, solid in this tournament, whereas Carrasco, he's not a defensively minded player in the slightest. Simeone wasn't that keen on him out wide for that very reason. And so it's one of those things where I don't think he'll get away with those same kind of mistakes against a Brazil team. It's as simple as that. I mean, look, the winning goal is beautiful. From Courtois to Chadli, everything about that goal is perfect. The pass, the weight of it from De Bruyne, the decision-making, the subtle little run from Lukaku inwards to drag a defender, yeah, which opens the space.
I enjoyed that.
His subsequent step over. I mean, look, we've talked
perfect,
already
that,
about...
Wasn't it? That attack was just perfect.
Yeah, and the thing is, we've talked about already Senegal and how sometimes we are very naive with the way that we analyse black and African players, and that in a chasm of ignorance, we fill it with stereotype. And I think sometimes we do that with Lukaku. We talk about, you know, his hold-up player, his first touch or whatever. He's such an intelligent forward in terms of knowing what's around him first and foremost, but also his runs off the shoulder, his timings of his run. He's such a wonderful footballer as a forward. And I think that goal really articulated that perfectly for me. He did it previously in another game where he made a beautiful run off the shoulder that was so perfectly timed. This goal, again, is just so... Yeah, it's my favourite goal of the tournament so far. It's the one I enjoyed the most just because of how, I think, inclusive it felt. It involved so many different players and so many little, almost Swiss watch pieces, if you know what I mean. Kind of so many little nuanced details to it that you noticed only when watching it again and again.
Who are you backing in this one then, Brazil or Belgium? Belgium, the top scorers, and Brazil with the staunchest defence.
I'm going to say Brazil. I think they haven't been convincing throughout the tournament. I think you look at Costa Rica, I think they got off a little bit with that one, not just because of the 90-minute goal, but Giancarlo Gonzalez should have scored in the first half. But I still think they're starting to find their rhythm. It's that age-old truth that it's not necessarily how you start a tournament, but how you finish a tournament that usually defines your success.
Okay, the final quarter-final then is Russia against Croatia. Obviously, Russia, I think many people dismiss them, expect them to get knocked out in the group stages. They are the lowest ranked team in the competition, after all. But they shocked everyone. They got through, and then they beat Spain on penalties, 2010 champion. Do you think this is a step too far against Croatia, or do you think we saw weaknesses in their inability to finish off Denmark?
It's a good question. I think, you know what, I think that they bear a similarity to England in so much as they've had some tournament disappointment. You go back to 2008, probably being the most notable one, where this is a golden generation that's coming to the end of its cycle. The likes of Modric, the likes of Rakitic as well. And I think as poor as they were, it would be disingenuous to talk about England making progress by burying demons and not say the same of Croatia. They could have made it so much easier for themselves had Modric scored that penalty. But I think in advancing through in the way they did, they actually showed a resilience that has to be admired. I don't think from a quality standpoint they were anywhere near as good as they were in the group stages. And yet, if I'm their coach, I'm kind of looking at them and saying, look, you reached the apex really quickly. You reach the pinnacle of what this team can do. Go and do it again. You know, that I always think to that old Alf Ramsey quote, you know, you've won it once, go and win it again. A similar kind of, you've produced brilliance before, go and do it again. It's not within the realms of impossibility for this team. And that's, I would say, without Kovacic really having a huge influence on this team. And I would say in general, they're quite a well set up team. They've got the pieces. The one major concern, which was that Vida would be playing centre-back, hasn't really produced any problems for me.
Who are you backing in this game then? Russia, as I say, the lowest-ranked team in the competition. Is this potentially a step too far for them? It feels like Croatia are going to be the side we see in the semi-finals for me. Potentially a 2-0 win, 3-0 win for Croatia?
Yeah, this is the difficulty with Russia, is that self included, I have essentially considered them out from the minute the opening ceremony had finished. And yet they're a defensively stern team. They just beat Spain. You can't look past that. There are certainly issues around the levels of stamina they've shown for a squad that is closer to 40 than 30 in a lot of quarters.
Yes, I think we'll be, you know, there's a few little alleged observations taking place, should we say. But I think
I'd love to know what Russian Lucasid tastes like.
Strong.
Others are available, of course. But I think, yeah, that if they take that same approach again, they're going to have to rely on penalties again, theoretically. It's just a risky way to play. And I know, you know, it's to me, it's the football equivalent of going to a points decision. It's, you can prepare for it. Absolutely, you can. And
it's,
I think,
a lottery,
we talked about that
say.
With Southgate.
Yeah.
But there's always a risk involved. You know, there's not, you could meet an inspired goalkeeper, all these kind of things. You know, they could have really done their homework on your penalties. It's not just about scoring them these days. It's about serving them as well.
Croatia, you backing them?
I am.
There we go, ladies and gentlemen. Quarterfinals previewed. Extremely excited for these. Some absolute corking games coming up. Not least of which, England versus Sweden on Saturday afternoon. Fingers crossed it's coming home. If England go through to semi-finals, wow. There's going to be some scenes in England. I don't know if you've seen some of the reactions from the UK. Scenes of people on Oxford Street stopping buses, people in the streets going crazy. Ross Kemp. Have you seen the Ross Kemp clip, Chris?
I've seen a still of it.
Oh, have you not seen the clip? I highly recommend watching that clip because it's one of the most entertaining. It was almost as entertaining as the penalty shootout itself. But it sums up my feelings perfectly on the situation. But yeah, it's great stuff right now in England, and we don't want it to end. So hopefully Gareth Southgate and Harry Kane can lead this team to a World Cup semi-final for the first time since 1990, which would be incredible. Until Saturday night, Sunday, we'll be back to review all the quarterfinals. Guys, thanks so much for listening. Leave us a review on iTunes. Click the link in the description of the podcast. Where can we find you, Chris, until Saturday?
At the front three, trying not to tweet. It's coming home every 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's difficult to resist. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you very soon. Until then, enjoy the World Cup quarterfinals.
That's a magic number. Three. Yes, it is. It's the magic number. Three. Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community was born three laced up in me, and that's a magic number.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.